Where's Chris?
I don't know.
Are we going to do the show without him?
Guess so.
Justin's here. Should Justin fill in?
Yeah, it might be good.
I thought he did a good job last week.
Yeah, I thought he was great.
Well, real I don't know if he was great. He was good.
Adequate.
He was competent.
You remember that that Shakespeare analysis? That was some good stuff.
Hello and welcome to What's the Deal, the Seinfeld review show that obsesses over peanuts. Each week we dissect every episode of Seinfeld in chronological order. With me today, as a return special treat, is Justin Armstrong.
Hello, everybody.
And your old favorite, Patrick Armstrong.
Hello.
I'm Cameron Wong, and this is episode 27, and today we will be looking at season 3, episode 10, The Stranded. And I feel like, in many ways, we've been stranded with this good guy, Justin Armstrong, because Christopher Young, that guy, he's got a busy schedule. He apologizes. He cannot be here again this week. But he will be back for the next episode. And, you know, we may have some more guest spots coming up during Chris Young's hectic time.
Yeah, what happened to Chris? Is he lost?
Yeah, he fell down.
Like in Amazon?
No, in Dundas Square.
Sure.
Well, it's a pleasure to be back. It was an honor to be on Seinfeld. What's the Deal show last time?
Seinfeld show.
I wish I was... Is that what this show's called? I always call it the Seinfeld show. It's a great honor to be back again. I'm glad... I heard the reviews for my performance last week was... quite good. So I'm sure you're relying on my star power to reinvigorate the ratings.
Yeah, I saw that both your mom and your older brother, who is not Patrick, left rave reviews about your performance.
I like how last week you were really humbled to be on the show, and this week you feel like you're carrying it.
Yeah, I feel like I'm taking over the whole show. It's a coup de show, if you will.
That's it. that's every week someone has to do that bit. Let's switch it up. Patrick, how are you today?
I'm pretty good. Just normal. Pretty good in general.
Nice.
Feeling good.
Good day.
Played
good
some
show.
Hill climb racing today.
I'm done with hill climb racing. You know.
Oh, I've had the music off for ages. I don't even know what it is.
Oh no, you got to put it back on because honestly, that's part of the experience. And that it's all like it's amazing and yet terrible at the same time. Like Patrick, what? How would you describe the experience of playing hill climb racing?
I don't know. Really fun, but I feel slightly guilty for having fun.
I feel like I almost have an existential crisis by playing that game. Because no part of it makes sense. Nothing makes any sense about that game. Who is... what is his name again? Like, Hillbilly? Billy Climber?
I'm not sure he had a name.
No, he has a name. It's in the app description. I guess I'll look it up while we're talking. But, you know, when you look at his soulless, dead eyes, this flimsy neck bobbing around in the wind, just driving, racing. But it's sad because he's racing no one. He's racing time itself. Justin had a beautiful analogy for the game the other day.
Yeah, it's like racing against, actually, I don't know what I said. Racing against the inevitability of death, yeah, and about the pointlessness of life. He has that blank look when he gets that neck snap, final release.
it's like John Locke. It's like the tabula rasa. It's like the blank slate. He's trying to wipe his mind, right? Mm. He's trying to go back. It's a return to that. But he can't actually get there, you know? He can never actually get to that point. He can't unsee what he's seen. He can't unlearn what he's learned. He being Newton Bill is the character's name.
Newton Bill?
And according to this, well, so for people who don't know, hill climb racing, we should have done this at the beginning, is an app that is available for both Android and iOS, and it is just almost painfully comical to look at. It's the graphics are bad, the music's bad, and the gameplay at first blush seems bad, but all of a sudden, it's like a black hole. It starts to suck you in. And so you play as Newton Bill, the young, aspiring uphill racer. He's about to embark on a journey that takes him to where no ride has ever been before. With little respect to the laws of physics, Newton Bill will not rest until he has conquered the highest hills up on the moon. Watch out, though. Bill's stout neck is not what it used to be when he was a kid. And his good old gasoline crematorium will easily run out of fuel. And so you just drive, and there's like this little gas meter, and you're driving. You're not really racing, because there's nobody else there. You're also just driving forever, and there's just like a series of gas canisters that you refill your car with. I don't know who set them out in advance for you, or what happens if you run out of fuel. Do you just, does he just die alone in the middle of that weird highway with giant 90-degree angle walls?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know, you guys are thinking about this a lot. I just like driving the little car.
I think you mean the gasoline crematorium.
Sorry, the gasoline crematorium. How are you doing, Cameron?
Oh, I'm doing well. I'm excited. I'm normally the last person to go, so I'll talk about my day. I taught a French class today. French 12.
Mais oui.
Oui, bien sûr, mes amis. Je suis le nouveau professeur, Monsieur Wong.
J'ai perdu mes pantalons.
Yeah, you should go out and find them. So, you know, that was fun. I got the new Carl Pilkington book for Idiot Abroad today. And actually, I also am giving a chance to a video game reboot. The new Tomb Raider game. I haven't bought a Tomb Raider game since, I think, 1999. So... It's going to be interesting. I played it for about 7 minutes so far.
Good.
She still has a blue shirt.
Mm-hmm.
Still has enormous cartoonish breasts.
Well, you know, she is not small-chested, but it is also not to the point where it almost, like, looked painful for her.
For a normal person, she has big breasts. But for video game character, almost below average.
And there's a Canucks hockey game on right now on the TV behind me. I can't see it. It's actually driving me crazy. I know we have at least one listener who is a Winnipeg Jets fan, one who is a Calgary Flames fan, and I don't begrudge those people those poor choices. But I tell you right now, I just want to watch this hockey game. Justin, you just look back. What's the score?
It's a tie game, 2-2.
Is it in overtime now?
It appears to be still in the third period. I think there's a minute of play left.
More than enough time to win 9-2. And Justin, yourself, welcome back to the show. How are you?
I'm pretty good. Had a lot of Coke Zero earlier, so I'm in a good mood.
Now, have you always been a man of the diet soda?
No, I have not, actually. Maybe in the last year, it's really incorporated into my life, but I love it. It's like guilt-free sugar drinks, and it's fantastic.
Patrick, do you have any feelings on diet colas?
Oh, it's fine, I guess.
I mean, I love the Coke Zero. It's really good. I don't have it very much anymore, but it's delicious.
I miss the heart palpitations of drinking a lot of sugar.
Well, you could always go back to that. You got some refined sugar around the house? Just put some refined sugar into some water.
Hmm. I could just eat a couple spoonfuls of jam.
Yeah, okay. Actually, you know what? Just do it. Yeah, that sounds good.
Yeah.
All right. Well, that's good. So we're all accounted for. And Chris Young, still not on the scene. But that's all right.
I'm sure he's doing great.
He's doing okay. I spoke to him on the phone the other day. That's that whole story.
Yeah.
I didn't have anything to add. I didn't want to, like, give up too much of his personal information. But, you know, he's doing all right. And, you know, we'll hear from him.
Do you feel like our listeners suspect that Chris is actually dead and we're just hiding it?
No. Maybe they suspect that Chris has left the show and we're just hoping to somehow kind of cover up that Chris Young will never be back. But that is not the case.
Just an endless string of guest hosts.
Always Justin. No. I hope no one thinks he's dead. I hope people know he's coming back. He likes the show.
Yeah, he loves it.
The show's a good thing. We like doing the show.
Mm-hmm.
And speaking of the show, this week we've got another great episode for you. At least of our show. Ooh. So, this episode is called The Stranded and is the 10th episode of Season 3. And in this episode, on the DVD, you can watch it with an introduction from Jerry Seinfeld. And the reason why is because this is a, quote, lost episode. This is an episode which was produced for Season 2. And Larry David was very unhappy with how the show turned out, and it was shelved. And somehow, I don't know if they just had a crunch or something, but this episode went into the rotation for Season 3. And Jerry introduces the episode because there's a major continuity error in this episode, being that George Costanza still has a job in real estate. And that is not the case. George Costanza doesn't have a job for the next 3 seasons of Seinfeld. And so in this episode, George convinces Jerry, and Jerry in turn convinces Elaine to head out to Long Island for a house party on the promise that, quote, there will be girls there. Once at the party, George strikes it lucky with a co-worker and leaves Jerry and Elaine to fend for themselves. And boy, it's a really bizarre episode. And I think we'll have lots to say about the quality of this episode, if nothing else. If you would like to follow along with the show notes and the picture, which is available for today's episode, head on over to whatsthedealshow.com, where we've got all the show notes, that little picture, and hey, back episodes too. So as soon as you're done listening to this episode, or if you're already sick of this episode, an opportunity to listen to another one of our fine audio recordings. Patrick, why don't you take us into the monologue?
Yeah, so the monologue, Jerry's talking about being in the drugstore, looking at cold medication. There's that whole wall. It's quite confusing. And then he goes into, like, the classic bit he has, or at least I feel like it's a classic bit, the, like, drug commercial guy one, where you got the guy who's got his arms out and his head to the side. Various horrible things happen to him. I think it's a good bit.
It's a really good bit. It's funny.
Mm-hmm.
I wrote down that it's a classic.
I wouldn't go as so far to say that it's a classic, but I do like how he says that the diagram of the guy with the just a big hole, basically his whole body is for his stomach, and that his mouth's open for the drugs to go down. That's just how the pharmaceutical industry sees the public. Honestly, I thought that was a pretty funny line. It's a little dig at corporate America, but I liked it.
Yeah, and I really like how, I don't know if he brings this up on another bit that he does about that guy, but I like the very accurate human anatomy in these advertisements where it's just like a tube straight down to a little bulb, which represents your stomach. But you know what? I have to agree with this monologue. Cold medication, I have trouble because I always look at it and it's not so much that I never know like which one to buy because of the various ingredients that are in them. I just never know which one is going to be the most effective, because they always seem to mix various sort of results together. And like sometimes I wonder if the ones that's like 8 hours, how much of that time is actually going to be effective and how much of that time is just a joke.
What always throws me about that kind of medication is it always gives recommended dosages and it always says do not exceed this amount. But it always seems the same amount. It always seems like no more than 4 pills a day, no matter how much, you know, ibuprofen's in there. Like it could be a child. It could be a child size dosages, but they'll still say no more than 4, or problems may arise. And that always kind of confuses me.
See, my problem is always with once I bought the medication and I try it out, I'm never expecting the side effects. I just have blind faith that it will make me better. And if I'm not feeling better, I just feel like I've gotten, like, I'm still sick and maybe the medicine wasn't strong enough. So, for example, you ever take those, like, DayQuil, like the non-drowsy cold medications?
Oh, I love the DayQuil in that yellowy-orange capsule.
Whatever it is that makes them non-drowsy just makes me feel insane. I feel so sick when I take those. And I always just think, oh, my cold's gotten worse. I'd better lie down. But actually, it's just the medication. When the medication wears off, I feel way better.
But I feel like you and Justin never take medication until you're, like, insanely sick. When you're at the beginning and you could just kind of avert the, like, small medication, I feel like both of you had, like, a moment of realization that these medications actually do something for you.
Well, Cameron, as I get older, maybe I've matured a little, and I feel like I use medication more often and more preemptively, but it is the case that I do like to enjoy my pain and revel in my own misery.
Why are you preemptively taking medication? What does that mean? Well, are you just like popping antibiotics in anticipation of potentially having a bacterial infection?
Preemptively. And he wants to bring on the superbug.
Yeah, bring him on. He's like the, I don't know, like the Jesus of bacterial infections.
Mm-hmm. Second coming of the superbug.
Well, that was a strange place to take that.
So the episode starts with Jerry and George in a drugstore. And George has fleas, and he wants Jerry to go to a party in Long Island.
The fleas is just glossed right over.
Yeah, I completely forgot that that was even a point until I looked at my notes. And I'm looking at bowtie flea collar. And that just, like, it just seemed insane written down, but they mentioned it. And, yeah.
I was expecting the flea thing to come back as we're watching it. Like, I was expecting him to go home with a woman, as we'll talk about later. And, like, the next day it'll be like, I gave her fleas, and then, you know, it'll be all over. But that did not happen.
No, it did not. I just wanted to segue back to, we always gloss over these parts because basically they're never important. But when they have the sort of location shot outside beforehand, if you pay attention to it, they have a marquee out there, and the marquee just says, I need more sex in big letters.
Yeah, you know, actually, I was watching the HD version of Seinfeld, and I could see that very clearly. It was all I could see in the shot, and I was obsessed with it, and I paused it and just kind of took in the scene. It was a pretty cruddy-looking street.
I mean, it wasn't nice. Is that supposed to be in the neighborhood? It must be close by if that's the pharmacy Jerry's going to.
Yeah, I guess so.
Well, it is pre-Giuliani, so...
So yeah, George with the fleas, though, very strange. And George, like every other character or one of the main four characters in these early episodes of Seinfeld, weird stories about relatives we never see. Like, they always mention, oh, my cousin, my whatever, and this was, he got fleas from, was it his uncle's dog or his cousin's dog or something like that?
Mm-hmm.
I just find it weird. It's like, it's kind of a crutch they had to go on to get these stories going, these mysterious, unseen relatives.
Like the mention of George's brother who impregnated someone. I'm not sure which episode that was, but that's kind of strange. I think his brother's only mentioned twice in all of Seinfeld in like the early seasons, but...
And he's never around the house either.
No, he really isn't.
Maybe it's some sort of tragedy. Maybe he died. Maybe that explains something about, you know, where George is coming from, his neuroses. We're really fixated on death today. So George is trying to convince Jerry to go to this party. And I was talking to Justin about this before we recorded the episode. And I'll probably talk about this in the summation. But this is the beginning of a theme I think this episode has. George talks about this party like it's high school. He's like, come on, it's going to be a good party. There's girls there. And he's like talking about the girls. And just his whole mentality about the party is very juvenile and beyond the sort of juvenility that I think we're used to in Seinfeld. I don't know. Did you guys feel like George is talking about it like a high school party?
Yeah, absolutely. Especially the way he called them girls instead of women.
Yeah.
And that he felt like
weird.
He couldn't go to the party on his own.
Yeah, actually, why did he want Jerry to go so badly?
Huh?
He just didn't want to go by himself. George even has a car.
Yeah, I guess he was meeting his potential lady friend at the party.
Yep.
So then, that's weird.
Yeah, it's a little strange. Either way, Jerry agrees to go.
Yeah, and then they start comparing ingredients on drugs. Have you guys ever done this?
I have, but I don't know why. I don't know what any of it means.
Yeah, I don't understand chemistry or pharmaceuticals.
Yeah, some occasionally, if I know that a particular thing bothers me, like, I forget now what it is, but the thing that's in those DayQuils that bothers me, I always check if that's in drugs. But aside from that, I just like to look at it. I feel like I've, you know, done my due diligence. Don't understand it, but you know, I've
what,
looked
what,
at it.
What are we really looking for? Or are we going to, like, there's some ingredient called, like, ripoff?
I don't know. Yeah,
oh,
or like
heroin.
It's
got a ripoff in it.
Heroin. Or like heroin or something. Like, oh, I don't want to get hooked on that.
I mean, I just stop at the byline. When it says, for cold or flu symptoms, that's where I stop. I'm not going beyond that.
This one will surely kill you.
poison.
So it's funny, you guys mentioned that George mentions that girl's going to be there. And the thing that throws me off is the way he broaches it with Jerry. It's almost like, it sounds like Jerry's the one that's supposed to be interested in her. When he's like, you know, are you going to come? And then George says, you know, Ava's going to be there. Why? He doesn't say anything about doing him a favor or anything like that. He's like, you know, Ava's going to be there. And George... And Jerry says, who? And then George is like, the nice one that works in my office. Like, I don't know. I actually, when I was watching this episode, thought that Jerry was the one that was supposed to be getting set up.
Yeah, maybe Jerry. Well, George knew that he had no chance with her, or at least he thought he knew. So maybe he thought she would want to meet Jerry or something.
Yeah, I don't know.
Because he didn't even really seem to have like a crush on her. He just kind of seemed to think she was his friend.
Yeah. Who?
It seems strangely non-jealous for George, though.
Yeah, I don't know what he was going with there, because honestly, it just seemed weird to me. I mean, I guess it all works out, and it's very George to be willing to turn that friendship into a ruined tryst in no time, so... We are really gaffing. There's some real dead air in here.
Yeah. It's there's girls everywhere.
Yeah. Why even go to a party? Eventually, George goes to pay, and the woman, like the cashier who's working, well, George thinks he's shortchanged and goes back, and the cashier gives him kind of the best look. Like, it is the most disapproving and, like, are you serious look that it is possible for a human to get. Like, she should get an award for that look. It's incredible. But she does not believe that George is shortchanged. She thinks that he's lying.
George is really acting like every really irritating customer who complains that you didn't give the right change or something's wrong with the store. The customer you don't want to have to deal with in customer service. He seems slightly off.
Now, they recycle this joke. They use this in the Ruthie Cohen episode where George thinks that she shortchanges him, that he gave her a 10 and she gave him change for a 5 or something like that. That's the episode where George's LeBaron catches on fire.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, they definitely reuse this kind of shtick, although it's an episode that's about 10 times better than this one.
Yeah, I wonder if they felt like that they wasted that joke on this episode.
Yeah, maybe. Either way, it is kind of a good setup, and it doesn't go anywhere until way later in the episode, and the payoff's all right, but it's weird because they let this storyline die for like 15 minutes of the show.
You do just kind of forget that it even happened until, you know, the story comes to more of a conclusion.
I also like how when George starts making a scene and there appears to be a police officer there at first, that his uniform just says security officer.
Yeah.
Why does he have all those badges if he's not a police officer? What are those badges proving?
He looks really tough. It's just like how, like, mall cops always have... Like their big maglite flashlight, kind of like in a big leather holster, right where a cop's gun would be. You know? They want to like have the affect of a cop,
just in case he needs to stop you in the middle of a robbery, and then shine a halogen light in your eyes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, another thing. Sorry, go ahead.
Oh, I thought you were moving into the next scene.
Well, I just wanted to say one more thing. So they mention how one of the main reasons Jerry doesn't seem to want to go is that the party is in Long Island, and it seems desperate to go to a party in Long Island. I looked on Google Maps, and if you're driving, it is 1 hour to go to Long Island from Manhattan. So do you think it's just like that stereotypical idea that like a Manhattanite never wants to leave Manhattan, like even going to other boroughs is a problem?
Maybe, because I feel like here in Victoria, there's sort of the problem that everything's so close together, and I was used to driving, you know, like an hour to get to Vancouver, or maybe like 40 minutes to anywhere just kind of outside of Vancouver. And everyone, when I first moved here, blew me away with what a big deal they made about things. Like, something's a 5-minute drive or a 10-minute walk. It's like, nah, it's too far. So maybe that's just like in New York. Maybe people just think that things are just too far away. It's just kind of what you're used to.
An hour drive, though, for a party that you come back to that night from, that sounds like, for just potential, quote, girls, I don't know. I can understand why someone wouldn't be too interested.
There could be chips and dip there.
The best dip ever.
I love a good dip.
Yeah, I don't know. An hour for an uncertain party where you don't know anyone, that sounds awful. And
this party is awful.
Yeah, so yeah, this is a good time, I guess, to move into the next scene. Okay, yeah, so this is a pretty lame party. Mm-hmm. They arrive, Jerry, George, and Elaine. The music is kind of this like cool jazz.
Riffingtons.
Everyone's Rippingtons.
Sorry, the Rippingtons.
Everyone's just kind of hanging out and just kind of standing and sitting and looking at each other. No one really seems to be having a good time. I guess it's a work party. Like, everyone seems to know George from work. And immediately, you know, people come over to George and start talking to him about closing accounts and other real estate things. And this is the part that seems really weird if you've been watching the series, because George is not employed and then gainfully employed and then back in the next episode, not employed.
Yeah, this is the worst party I've ever seen.
Oh, man.
It is so bad that weird, cool, smooth jazz that's playing, just the way that people are dressed. This is like the oldest looking party I've ever seen on Seinfeld.
They do all seem to be at least 40 or maybe 50 years old.
And I think the main thing I noticed is how brightly lit everything is.
I've been going off on this all day. Honestly, yeah. It's like they have every single lamp in the house on, every single chandelier light on. It's too bright.
Turn a couple of those lights off.
But it looks like this is the set for somebody's living room from a different, like a far less popular NBC TV show.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
like maybe, I don't know if Full House was on NBC, but it looks like maybe like a house they'd visit on Full House, like a neighbor or another uncle.
If we were to continue the theme that this is like a high school party, this is kind of like a party that your parents have for your little friends, but is actually really lame.
Yeah, it's the kind of party where you can tell that probably as soon as you walk in, you know it's a bad party. Like, you just know you want to leave immediately, but once you've walked in that door, you're trapped.
It really isn't. It almost looks like they've dialed like the year of the show back by about 6 or 7 years.
Mm-hmm.
This doesn't look like anywhere in the, like, what is this, 1993? So like the mid 90s almost.
93 mm-hmm. already?
I think this is 93. Maybe it's 92.
I think 93. Or I think the show was like shown 92, 93. So depends when it aired, like in the season.
Well, either way, it was... it aired 91.
Oh, we're all off except for Justin.
Yes!
Jerry and Elaine are super sad about being at this party, and immediately Jerry decides they need a signal to help get each other out of bad conversations. And that signal is hitting themselves on their heads. I don't know why they think this is a good signal. It's certainly obvious, but maybe too obvious. The person they're talking to, every time they use this signal, seems to notice.
I'm not really sure why they need a signal. I think it's pretty obvious when people are uncomfortable at a party. You know?
Yeah. I feel like I'm pretty good at getting away from a conversation I don't want to be at a party. Maybe I'm just rude, but I feel like I always have an excuse. I need to go refill my drink.
This is boring me. I have to go somewhere else.
You're really boring. You have bad breath.
It's funny because I was actually trying to think of, like, you know what? Maybe there's a way to have a good signal, something less subtle. But I think the problem is that if you pick a less subtle, or if you pick a more subtle signal, I should say, the problem is that it could be so subtle that it could be misinterpreted. Like, I was thinking, if you guys ever watch people sign in baseball to, like, the hitters or the runners, are you familiar with this?
Yeah, sure, yeah.
I was thinking, you know, what if you just did that thing where they kind of, like, wipe your nose for a second, like, you wipe the outside of your nose? What if you legitimately just kind of, like, scratch the outside of your nose and suddenly your friend pulls you out of there?
And how closely is your friend going to be watching your conversation that this is going to happen? Like, what are they going to be doing? Just, like, you take turns having conversations with people, and then while one person's having a conversation, you're just locked on their face on the corner of the party, drinking slowly, looking for that signal, and then you dart in.
That's why you need an obvious signal.
Well, I think, as Justin would probably tell us, in all activities, you need a spotter. So one person just stands over there and watches the other person.
Yeah, it's funny, though, because as soon, you know, Jerry was right to do this, because as soon as he starts talking to someone, he's immediately in a bad conversation.
Oof,
this
so
guy
bad.
Seems immediately bored with Jerry and just bored in general. He says the thing that Jerry was dreading. You came all the way from Manhattan for this. Yeah, it's the worst.
I really like how this guy is kind of like questioning Jerry about all these things. And when he asks him what he does, and Jerry starts slapping his head and tells him he's a comedian, and to which his response is, people tell me I'm pretty funny.
Yeah.
I feel like this conversation is a bit of, it's Jerry having revenge at people who have asked them these things. Like, where do you get your material? How do you come up with this stuff? I'm sure he's been asked that thousands of times. So I think he was just use this opportunity to finally get back at those people with a ready retort that he might not have otherwise given. I'm not sure what his retort was, but I'm sure it was good.
Heads laughing.
Right, right.
Yeah, and Elaine starts talking to a guy who seems to be obsessed with George Washington Carver.
The peanut.
For some reason, this actor seemed familiar to me, but he had no billing for this episode, so I couldn't figure out who he was. But he was hilarious. He might have been the funniest part of this whole episode.
Easily. Peanut brittle, yeah. Peanut oil, peanut butter.
Now, what if he'd used the pistachio? Now, I know the cashew is a legume.
It's too funny.
Now, yeah. Patrick, did you do the research about the pistachio?
No, was I supposed to do research?
Well, because he wanted to know if you could use one because, you know, would it count as a nut?
He actually doesn't say pistachio. He says pecan.
Oh.
Oh.
I remember I wrote that down. Pecan, and I wrote brackets, a nut, question mark.
Do you think it's a droop?
It's a hickory.
It is a nut.
Nut.
A true nut?
Well, it's technically a droop. Oh,
really?
It is. because it's a fruit with a single stone or pit surrounded by a husk, right? So that is a droop.
I don't know. On Wikipedia, the word droop does not appear.
Are you on the pecan Wikipedia page?
I am.
Because I see the word droop right here. It says droop.
D-R-U-P.
Oh, I just don't know how to spell it.
Did you spell it D-R-O-O-P?
I may have.
Who's to say?
Man,
we just are all over the map with this episode. as we digress into how are you spelling droop?
Sorry about that. So as bad a time as Elaine and Jerry are having, George is having a great time. He calls George over. He calls Jerry over. George thinks Eva's really into him. He doesn't know what to do.
I mean, just go for it.
Yeah. Well, as we'll see later, he gets really freaked out. But before that, and maybe the strangest scene of the episode, Elaine is sitting on the couch, kind of despondent. And this woman keeps mentioning her fiance. And the more times she says fiance, the sourer Elaine's face gets, until eventually she can't take it anymore and says, Cameron?
Maybe the dingo ate your baby.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just trying to do my impression of Elaine, not that my true Australian accent would be any better. In fact, let's go ahead to everyone's favorite part of the show. Imitate an accent. Patrick, your best Australian accent. Go.
Maybe the dingo ate your baby.
Not bad. Justin?
Does it have to be dingo centered?
No, you can take it anywhere you want.
I ate some shrimp off the barbie.
that was good, and I'm struggling because mine was almost identical to that phrase.
What's a barbie?
It's the barbecue.
Oh,
I was gonna have had a steak off the barbie. Come on down to the Outback Grill House. You call that a knife? This is a knife.
Wow.
Well, that's all I know about Australia. It's the Australia branded Outback Steakhouse and Crocodile Dundee.
Yeah, so this is really funny because the woman just says, like, she's trying to be cute and says she lost her fiance, her little baby. And Elaine comes in, who was this woman that this happened to? Was it, what's her name? Something Chamberlain? Lizzie Chamberlain? Something like that? And there's like a Meryl Streep movie about it?
Yeah, it's...
Lindy Chamberlain.
Evil Angels.
I thought it was A Cry in the Dark.
Yeah, it was released as A Cry in the Dark outside of Australia and New Zealand, but its original title is Evil Angels.
Oh, okay. Yeah, so... And I guess that's a line from the movie, because this woman, like, her kid was lost on a camping trip, and she said that a dingo stole her baby.
Yeah, it's a misquoted line. It's a famously misquoted line, or at least it was at the time. So the actual line is, the dingo took my baby, not the dingo ate my baby.
Yeah, and so I don't know what this is. Like, do you think... Like, obviously, Elaine is just totally fed up with this party at this point, and she doesn't care about any of these people.
Kind of, although she's so happy with herself after delivering that line.
She has that huge smile. She's so smug about that clever line.
Well, what is she doing? Does she think she's being really clever?
I think she is.
The audience, like, the laugh track, they laughed and they clapped when Elaine did this cute pop culture reference. Oh, man.
I thought they were maybe clapping because this fiancé woman was so obnoxious.
I mean, it is bad. I really can't stand it when people always refer to their significant other as their fiancé once they get engaged. I can appreciate it maybe if you wanted to introduce them as your fiancé or something.
Yeah, but this is my fiancé, Dan.
Yeah, and then Dan has a name. We're done with that, or, you know, Linda has a name. Whoever it is, just use their name. I understand the nature of your relationship. It's just like you don't always say, like, my husband, or you don't always say my wife. They're a human with traits beyond their relationship to you.
So what is engagement etiquette? Are you never supposed to refer to them as your boyfriend or girlfriend after engagement? Do you always have to refer to them as fiancé? What's the etiquette there?
I mean, I think it depends, because if you're with... I guess it depends on who you're with. I think some people wouldn't care, right? You could be like, hey, this is my girlfriend, Karen. We just got engaged recently. Mm-hmm. I think some people would be okay with that. But I think... maybe not a lot of people but I bet there are quite a few people who would be irritated to hear their significant other refer to them as not fiancé, because it sounds to them maybe like they're dialing back the seriousness of the relationship.
Yeah, but I think at the same time, she definitely doesn't need to say fiancé 80 times.
But she's trying to brag. She's trying to let
she certainly is trying to brag, but it's super irritating, and I can't stand her. I'm glad Elaine tried to put her in her place in some way, but it's definitely a bizarre way to do it.
She zinged her with that dingo line there.
Yeah.
So George, I know we kind of covered it here a bit, but George is telling Jerry about how he's got a chance for this, and he thinks he has a chance with Ava, and the reason is, I don't know why he says he thinks he has a chance. She says to him, I want to make love to you, or I want you to make love to me.
What does this mean? I don't understand these signals.
Women,
signals,
why can't
Jerry,
they just say...
signals.
Why can't women just say what they want?
it was pretty strange.
Yeah, George has a great line, though. He said, it's funny, he thinks he's totally messed it up, but he says that he longs for her. And, you know, before he said it, I was thinking it was going to be a lot worse. That he longs for her, if she is really attracted to him, that's not so bad.
It's not very good, though.
It's not great, but what's funny about it is how he tells Jerry. He pauses and he just says, I long for you. he just sounds so pathetic when he says it, but it's not a bad line.
But it's not really good.
What do you say?
Yes.
Just yes?
Okay. Let's go.
Sounds good?
You think okay?
Oh.
I'm being a bit facetious here, but I don't know. I feel like I long for you is like when you get caught up in the moment and you've barely scraped by with a positive enough affirmation of that. You know, maybe don't try to play it so cool, George. Maybe you don't need to try and be a Keats here or Shelley.
I don't think he was. I think he was just freaked out. George is
I long to... for you?
Yeah, because, like, you know, she seems to be a little bit above his social standing, a little bit out of his league, if we're using the high school analogy. So, you know.
But yeah. I think this works perfectly with the high school analogy, because here it is, at the party, some attractive girl, the it girl, has, you know, come on to George. And George, in a moment of panic, when the popular girl is kind of hitting on him, comes up with kind of a corny bad line, but he hasn't quite botched it. It's going. I mean, I was at that high school party like 8 or 9 times. I mean, that girl never came up to me. That part never happened. But I saw it happen for other people. Looked good.
Well, George isn't taking it well. He's totally freaked out. He's at the point where, like, he wants out of this, what he obviously thinks is a great opportunity. He's not ready for the pressure.
He's not, and he makes, in the last episode, he makes a line about how uninhibited sex is like going pee in front of a bunch of people and not caring. Mm-hmm. Here, George, when he's freaking out, says that it's a lot of pressure for someone to say, make love to me. And he responds, he says, what am I in the circus? What if I can't deliver? What about the circus has to do with making love to this beautiful woman?
Yeah, it's funny. George, his character is really like cycling between being a prude and being a total like gross dude. like in the episode where I think it was the tape, he's so attracted to Elaine, he's such a prude and so nervous and whatever. And then in the last one, he's talking about uninhibited sex, and in this episode, it's back to being a prude. It's no good.
He really is, but I mean, I still can't get past the circus. What does that mean? How am I supposed to do this tonight, Jerry? I don't have a seltzer bottle. Like, what is this? I really don't understand what the analogy is, but Jerry doesn't even bat an eye. Jerry doesn't seem to think that this is a weird analogy.
It's really weird. And then, yeah. Yeah, it's really weird. There's a little monologue break, and Jerry says that men have a code and that all plans are tentative. And if, you know, a man ever has an opportunity to have sex, it's okay to break plans. He says even astronauts do this.
Do you agree with this, Patrick?
Is the implication that all of Mission Control, they're all male? That it's a completely male-dominated industry? That there are no women in operation there?
I don't know. That's an interesting way to talk about it. I mean, I guess he just says that even... I think he's saying that a male astronaut would not get on the shuttle in time because he's talking to a woman.
But astronauts don't... They don't control the countdown. Are you saying they're...
Well, if they don't get on, I don't think they'd launch up. It.
If an astronaut doesn't show up, they scrub the mission.
No, you have to go on with the show.
Justin's world's like, he's not here. Just launch it empty.
The pilot isn't here, but just launch it anyway. Doesn't matter. Just in charge of the experiment for this mission. Not here.
So anyhow, Patrick, do you think this is the male code? Is this a real thing?
Because
I hate to say this, but I kind of think that it's kind of true, at least for a lot of people. I've had many times where, and please notice who this is not about, but I've had many times where I've had people cancel on me. It's like, sorry, you know, I got a date, something's happened, or it's whoever or whatever, and it's just over.
I've never had
to make that call, but...
I kind of agree. I don't know that it's just men, though. I feel like most women are probably on board with this, too. You know, if you made plans with a friend to go to a movie, and then they have a date with someone they really like, you're not going to stop them, you know? You understand.
Justin.
No, I really wanted to see Warm Bodies tonight. What am I going to do?
Good movie.
What do you think, Justin?
I feel like it's a pretty well-respected convention of society that sometimes you just gotta break those plans for those special ladies.
Those ships passing in the night, eh?
That's true.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, all right. Well, back at the party again. And George, he's excited. He's taking Ava home.
Yeah, and as they're leaving, Elaine sees her fur coat and she goes on the attack. and, you know, Ava calls her a hypocrite and, you know, Elaine just says she's a monster. But no one else really knows what to say. George keeps trying to move things along, but...
he has such a great line. Something about... I'm not sure who says it, but it says... that why don't you just go run over a squirrel? And George says, that's why we're here in America. I don't know what that means, but it was pretty great.
It was a really great line. I really liked it. Although, you want to talk about the code. Elaine's really screwing this up for George. What is she doing? I guess we know why she would do this. She's passionate about animal rights, but come on. George is a miserable man.
Do they ever mention that Elaine is a vegetarian or, I guess, pescatarian in the show?
No, and I think we almost certainly see her eat meat. I mean, her cousin Holly is the one who eats all that meat, the mutton.
Yeah. And I'm sure she ate lobster is seafood. But
no, Elaine is definitely eating some meat. I'm just going to say that right now. And if I'm wrong...
She wants to go to Sky Burger in an earlier episode.
Yeah.
But maybe she's getting a fish burger, though.
From Sky Burger?
They
can
have a fish fillet type thing.
From Sky... I don't think so.
Is Sky Burger a thing? Like a real restaurant?
I don't think so. But even McDonald's has a Sky Burger. I mean, McDonald's has a fish burger.
So there's a Sky Burger in Vermont. All right.
That's the same one.
So I'm going to look at this one. If there's no fish burger,
this will be definitive.
All right. So they have a veggie burger.
There we go.
But I mean, everyone's going to have one. Oh, you can get a creamsicle there, though. A creamsicle milkshake. Please join us next week when we'll be live at 161 Church Street in Burlington, Vermont.
Church Street.
Yeah, well, that sounds great. We could visit James Kochalka.
Yeah, that'd be good. I mean, I don't know why he would see us.
Because we're his biggest fans, and he loves our podcast.
I mean, that would be nice. All right, well, yeah, let's go visit him. Do you think that's close to his house? Do you think he's been to Sky Burger?
Did you say Virginia or Vermont?
Or Vermont, sorry.
Oh, yeah, it's probably pretty close. I don't think Vermont's that big.
It can't be that small.
He doesn't drive, though, so he'd have to have a bike. I'm sure our audience is really excited about talking about James Kochalka.
Yeah, obscure they are.
And so Jerry tells Elaine that, well, I guess he tells her earlier that they're just going to let George take the car and they're going to try to get a ride, maybe call Kramer. And there's a scene cut. Jerry and Elaine are on the couch. Everyone has left the party. And the hosts, especially the wife, are furious at them. Hate them.
I like how mad his wife is. She's absolutely furious. And let me tell you, perhaps the only thing more palpable than their anger is their inability to act.
Mm-hmm. They're so bad.
They are atrocious. They're really bad. And actually, what's interesting, though, is I don't know if you noticed this, Patrick. I mentioned it to Justin at the time, but did you happen to recognize the actor who plays the party host?
No. Well, he looks familiar to me, but I don't know who he is.
So he was on the extremely popular TV show The Shield. Are you familiar with that TV show? It's a cop show.
I know
show.
Of it. I've never seen it.
And it had a bunch of like notable act, like Glenn Close was on it. Forrest Whitaker was on it.
Yep.
And he's the lead actor on the show. He's the main guy.
Huh.
Vic Mackey or something like that. I don't know. I did not really watch the show very closely. So, but either way. It's surprising because that was a really popular show and it was on for a long time. So you'd think he'd be a good actor and maybe he was just starting out or maybe this is a bad role for him. But he's awful in this.
Yeah, they're both pretty bad. You know, this is kind of an overall thing, but I feel like just the fact that we don't really know how to talk about this episode, I think that's a hint that maybe it's not that good and it's all over the place and it maybe makes sense that David didn't want to show it. Because it's not very cohesive. The acting is bad. Characters just do things that don't really make sense. It's a weird episode.
Yeah, the first half, I guess, of the party doesn't really have anything at all to do with the second half, other than mm-hmm. the fact there's some same characters. It's just this weird... Cameron was saying earlier that they just seem to run out of ideas as they're going, so they just have to do something else so that they wrote something else, but it didn't really work as an episode.
But let's save this. We gotta power through this thing.
All right.
Yeah. So I guess, you know, eventually Kramer comes.
With a strange baseball hat.
Yeah, he's got a baseball hat, which I have never seen him wear before. I've never seen him wear a ball cap.
Looks vaguely normal. It's strange.
Yeah.
You know what I noticed in this scene? So Kramer shows up, and he talks about how he couldn't remember the exact address, but he remembered the numbers, so he visited every single house on that street with those combinations of numbers. So
that's very dedicated.
It is. He's a good friend when it comes down to it. But Jerry writes a note with his address and stuff for this party host saying, hey, thanks, if you're ever in town, you know, I'll see if I can do something for you, a solid. Now, I noticed Jerry Seinfeld, left-handed.
Huh.
Oh.
Pretty cool.
Explains everything. I mean, that was my whole observation.
Yeah, so Kramer, you know, Jerry apologizes to this angry host. Well, he's not super angry, but his wife is. And, he says, you know, he gives this guy his number, his address, and says anytime he's in the city, you could take him to a comedy show or whatever. And yeah, you know, I guess Jerry's just doing this as some kind of non-committal thing to apologize.
I guess, but he's just saying he'll give him some tickets to a show. He doesn't say show up my house and hang out.
Yeah, that's true. So, yeah, I guess they get home. We cut, and in the next scene, Jerry, he's on the phone. He's sick.
He is. Now, I don't know if you guys picked up on this. This is a whole week later.
Yeah.
He talks about how it's been a week, and that he and Elaine are both sick. You talk about a scattershot episode. Why does this have to take place a whole week later?
Yeah, it could be the next day. I guess it doesn't make sense that... do you guys know what this host's name is?
Oh. I don't know. Bad host.
Okay, so bad host. I guess it doesn't make sense that
His name is Steve.
Steve. I guess it doesn't make sense that Steve would be in the city the next day. So it kind of does have to be later. So the dude, he shows up, and Jerry's just about to go to the pharmacy to meet George, and this guy is very disappointed that Jerry does not want to hang out with him, even though Jerry is very nice and lets this guy hang out at his apartment. You know, I don't even know why this guy would want to hang out at his apartment. Why doesn't he go to a coffee shop or a pub or something and just hang out and have a coffee or something before, you know, he takes his ride back to Long Island?
It's really weird. It's like Jerry's like the cool kid at school. He's like, I thought I'd come down here and see what it's like to hang out with somebody in show business. I mean, he's already seen it's just some really normal one-bedroom apartment. Mm-hmm. It's not like Jerry's leading some sort of glamorous life. You know, he didn't give him his address at, I don't know, the Plaza or something like that and say, stop by. This is just this guy's dingy one-bedroom apartment. What is he hoping for? Why would he let this stranger just hang out in his house? I wouldn't want to hang out in a stranger's house.
Yeah, well, Jerry's just guilty, you know? He feels bad that he's ignoring this guy. I don't know why he feels guilty. Maybe just because this guy seems so sad and he made him so mad. But I don't even think those hosts really had cause to be so angry, right?
2 a.m. Come on.
2 a.m. I don't know. When was this party ending that 2 a.m. was like... so unreasonable.
9 p.m.
Yeah. They'd been there 5 extra hours.
But it's funny. You know, I know we were talking about the chess game in last week's episode, and I said the only thing worse in these early seasons of Seinfeld than Jerry's acting is Jerry acting with himself. This scene is way worse. I'd rather watch like a whole episode centered around Jerry's brain playing his penis at chess than this scene again. It's so bad. I don't know if it's just because they have no chemistry or something out there. I was almost starting to feel like Jerry was the superior actor between the two. Mm-hmm. It was really bad. I know that our episodes where we really kind of hammer on the negatives are maybe not our most fun episodes, but I just cannot emphasize just how poor it was. Maybe it was the writing, though, too, because it's a pretty strange conversation they have.
Yeah.
And he's like, this is the kind of lasting impression I make on people when Jerry doesn't remember who he is.
Yeah, it's almost like a Rodney Dangerfield type thing.
I was going to say,
this is not good.
Jerry is a snob, and this guy is a slob. It's a classic slobs versus snob story.
It's like The Odd Couple, really.
Mm-hmm. Or Back to School.
Hmm.
So Jerry meets up with George at the pharmacy. And George is pretty upset about this whole situation. He regrets meeting Ava going home with Ava. Because now at the apartment, at work, it's like every day is a date.
Office dating is a mistake.
Mm-hmm.
And once again, this just furthers my high school analogy, though, because it is. It's like going out with somebody in high school and then you break up and you have to keep going to the same school and you see each other every day. And you're in the same places every day. It's just like that. But George had his shot, you know, the it girl, the cheerleader, the whoever. And now he's paying the price.
I do love the mental image of George constantly writing at his desk patter that he has to say to this his new girlfriend.
Yeah.
And his idea that he'll not go to the bathroom the rest of the day if he has a particularly good conversation just so he doesn't ruin it. I love, because again, it's the bathroom-centric George that I love. The fact it's his whole life thinking about the bathroom. It's another great example.
Mm-hmm.
I noticed that we went with the very highfalutin reference to the Divine Comedy. They got a Dante reference into this episode.
Oh, I didn't even notice that.
Jerry references how his worst nightmare, or George says that his worst nightmare came true. Every day is a date, and Jerry says, "That's one of Dante's 9 stages of hell, isn't it?" So there you go. If you thought this episode was no good, you're wrong.
Wow.
Okay. How could it go bad when you got Dante in there?
Almost as bad as having a contact stuck in your eyeball.
That is the worst.
It's like, I just wanted this episode to be over and it was never ending. And the devil's like, come on, you can do it. Just stay awake to the end and then you can go to bed.
But it never ends.
And so then we have a cut and Kramer and Steve meet. Steve is pretty sad that he's left alone. But, you know, he's kind of intrigued by Kramer. And, you know, he's hoping for a drink. And Kramer decides to hook him up.
Once again, just very strange. He's like, hey, can't a guy get a drink in here? Yeah. It is weird. And it is actually kind of Dangerfield-esque, I suppose.
You know, if you're trying to look at...
Sorry, go ahead.
Because, okay, if we're trying to make sense of this episode... Why this guy is so strange? Because at the party, he seemed just like a normal guy, a normal schlubby husband, essentially, who's the host of the party. Boring. Yeah, very boring. But then all of a sudden, a week later, he acts really crazy. Did he have a fight with his wife? Or is he going to get divorced? Maybe, you know, is he on drugs? There got to be something.
I feel like he's on drugs.
There has to be something. Drugs makes a lot of sense because he is not acting normal, especially compared to previously. So... You know, there's got to be an explanation for this. And I think, yeah.
Yeah, and, you know, at the party, he's so calm, just making dad jokes, wearing that dad sweater, being really boring. And here, he's drunk. And, you know, later hires an escort.
Yeah, and once again, it's just like high school drinking, you know? It's like, dad's out of town. Hey, where's the drinks in here? He's like, oh, I might have something. And then they're getting drunk in the house. The parent isn't there. The person that owns the house isn't there. And they get just absolutely clubbered. They are destroyed. They get so drunk. And like, but the scene is brutal. So this is one of these dovetailing scenes. It cuts back and forth. But when we see them when they're drunk and they're just laughing forever...
I do like Kramer's recount of the dove story with Elaine. When Elaine had to sit in the car and while Kramer had to get the doves from the magician friend, and they all get everywhere. It's a great bit of continuity there between episodes.
Yeah, it's nice. A nice touch. Yeah, they're both loving it. And this guy, I guess we'll get back to George and Jerry at the pharmacy after this, but eventually this guy, you know, decides to call an escort service, and Kramer, you know, he's all for it. He's got
Kramer
a girl.
Has the phone number memorized.
Yeah. Well, you know, he's watching those late night escort commercials.
I guess so.
Escort commercials? Is that a thing?
Well, like party lines.
I guess.
I mean, I don't know if those are still a thing.
Yeah.
Are those still a thing?
Party line commercials?
Yeah.
I think
there's so,
yeah.
Party lines? Huh.
Yeah. You know,
I mean,
like,
I can't think of anything.
What's cool singles in your area?
If there's something that's less like a party than calling into, like, a chat room, but, like, an audio one. I always kind of wondered, if it's a party line, are there multiple people on there? Are you all trying to talk to, like, one girl at the same time?
That's awful.
Everyone just has to, like, take turns talking. You have to be quiet. You can't have everyone talking at once on the phone. It doesn't work.
I don't think that's how it works.
How does it work, then? Dateline, yeah. Professor.
I think there's one girl per caller. I'm sure.
Well, I think that's different from, like, a party line. Maybe that's what a party line is. Maybe we are wrong.
I just like the idea that it's just, like, a six-line free-for-all. Yeah.
Hey, are there any girls here? Hello? Hello?
Hey. Hey.
Hey. Hello?
Hi. Are you the girl?
Are you a woman?
No, I heard one.
No, not you.
I like the idea that, you know, the woman finally speaks maybe on this party line. And she's like, hey, guys, you know, whatever. And someone asks her some questions. Like, what type of guy do you like? And she's like, oh, I like a strong man. And then some guy's like, I can lift 100 pounds over my head. I benched 160, though. And it's just like a clamorous group of guys trying to outdo each other, all for the approval of this woman who's probably sitting in like a white office being paid $10 an hour to field these awful party line phone calls.
Yeah, it seems now that, just all around terrible.
That's the dream of America.
That's why we're here.
Yeah, and so back at the pharmacy, Jerry picks the medicine. George asks how much it is, and he sort of offers to get it for him, but we soon learn that he's not buying it. He's going to shoplift it because the store owes him $10.
I like how George describes it as a matter of honor to steal mm-hmm. it back.
He demands satisfaction. But yeah, immediately the guard catches him and he looks kind of freaked out.
I really like that through some serendipity, it's the exact same cashier and guard that are still working there. Mm-hmm. 1 week later, the exact same setup, the exact same arrangement of employees are there in this small, bad pharmacy set. I don't know if you guys noticed that. This whole episode, you know, the sets are strange. This pharmacy is so tiny. It's like the size of someone's kitchen. There's one shelf on a wall and a couple in the middle, and that weird tiny little checkout space. It doesn't really look like a business at all.
I guess that's what they
yeah, it looks like a very hastily made set.
They blew all their budget on the lighting of the party, so
those lights aren't cheap.
George gets caught, hauled off, and Jerry is not concerned whatsoever that George is going to jail and mm-hmm. instead just buys the medicine.
Well, I don't know. Jerry just seems kind of resigned to this whole thing. Like when George was demanding his $10 back, Jerry just kind of was leaning against a shelf, looking annoyed like this happens all the time. And I feel like he probably just thought that George had this coming.
I mean, he was stealing.
Yeah. I like how little effort Jerry put into trying to convince this guy, to convince George not to steal it.
He really did just protest once and then, well, all right, steal me this medicine. Mm-hmm. It's not stealing if it's something you need.
Mm-hmm. And if the store owes you money, all the more reason. So Jerry ends up buying the medicine. He gets home. Just as he's opening the door, he hears Steve arguing with someone inside about wanting some money.
It's Patty, not the bank.
Mm-mm. And he opens the door. This prostitute or escort is arguing with the guy, and he does not want to pay her. This guy seems so crazy.
He does. He seems insane. It's like he's on drugs. I mean, he's definitely drunk now, but he's insane. There's nothing normal about him. He seems completely unbalanced.
Mm-hmm.
I do like how he introduces Jerry to Patty, though, like it's some sort of normal thing going on.
Yeah.
And she replies, what does she say exactly here? She says, it's a pleasure to make your acquaintance, I'm sure. And she has this sort of like affected, like Southern Belle accent. Yeah. It's like she's someone who was once a debutante and has kind of tumbled in the world. And she's still trying to hold a measure of a modicum of modesty.
I actually think she is, you know, with her 90s hair and her weird outfit, she looks not particularly appealing, let's put it that way. But I feel like she is actually an attractive woman. You know, maybe she's... I think Cameron said she's in her 40s, maybe, at this point.
I think she was 46 when they filmed this episode.
But I just can't get past that 90s hair. That is just too much.
It's a wall of hair.
You know, she actually kind of looks like Paula Deen to me.
Really?
Do you guys know who Paula Deen is?
I do, but I didn't really get that.
Paula Deen?
She's got the big hair. I don't know, the Southern accent.
But Paula Deen just has those crazy eyes.
Yeah, that's true.
I mean, and There's actually nothing worse than what I'm doing right now. I've just looked at the Google image search for Paula Deen, and it is just a wall of Paula Deen making the exact same face with the exact same hair. Are you looking at this, Patrick?
No, I can bring it up.
Yeah, I'd like you to look at it, and then I'm going to go ahead and throw that into the show notes for this week.
Because
people just need to see this wall of Paula Deen.
Oh, wow, this is crazy. And then all of a sudden, put up Dolly Parton.
Yeah, although I do like that the related search is young Paula Deen.
Ooh.
She's got the same smile.
Yeah,
the horrifying smile. And strange eyes. And then there's just this... there's some strange pictures in here. Yeah, check this out. We'll put up a picture. Why don't we get a picture of the debutante? Mm-hmm. Next to her, and people can make up their own minds about what is or is not.
Yeah. So eventually, Jerry decides to pay off this woman because she says she's not going to leave. He only owes her $50, so he decides to pay. And for some reason, police come into the apartment and they're right there.
Yeah, why are the police there?
Yeah, it makes no sense to me. There's just two cops there all of a sudden, and he's arrested for solicitation of prostitution. Maybe they followed her or something?
Well, how long did it take them to come up there to put an end to this thing? We followed Patty to the apartment. Now we'll wait a few hours and get him.
Yeah, it makes no sense to me. It's weird. And so, yeah, Jerry's got nothing to do. Elaine comes in with some chicken soup, I guess, to heighten the embarrassment, and Jerry is arrested.
Now, Elaine notices that Patty's wearing fur and asks if it's real fur. And I like, there's some air quotes going on here, but I like how both Jerry and the police officer in unison is like, oh boy, like, here we go again with these women and their furs. It's bad.
I mean, I laugh, but it is pretty bad.
It's like almost like they're reacting to like, here we go, here comes the cat fight or something like that. It feels bad.
Not that Seinfeld would shy away from that.
Well, that is true.
And so then in the next scene, George and Jerry are hanging out, watching a game, eating pizza, and they're talking about their time in the Clink.
Yeah, and they're pretty casual about it.
It's really weird.
Once again, this is the last scene where I said it's just like reminds me of high school. It's almost like talking about like high school bullies and stuff and how, oh, you remember that guy? Oh, yeah, we all hated him. Like they're picking out the specific people that they did not like. Like how someone threw gum, a piece of gum at him, which also struck me as being something that like a high schooler might do.
Yeah, and police or prison is like detention, or getting locked up is detention.
Yeah, it's definitely weird. And then there's a monologue, and Jerry's just talking about favors. There's big favors, there's little favors. It's just the pause, the way they say it, tells you how big it's going to be.
I mean, it's kind of true, I guess.
Yeah.
I mean, it wasn't a particularly hilarious closing monologue. Perhaps the funniest part was the really bad freeze frame that they chose. I feel like whoever was editing these episodes doesn't like Jerry Seinfeld because he consistently picks the most unflattering freeze frame as possible.
Just all teeth.
He is. He's doing like a Paula Deen face. And yeah. That's it. That's that episode.
Whew, that was rough.
You know, now that we've gone through it, I hated this episode. I think it's one of the worst I've seen.
You know, I was saying to Cameron earlier that in the all-time worst Seinfeld episode, I was thinking if this was considered it, I can't think of even an episode that is in close contention to it because this is such a bad episode. It's not funny and it doesn't make any sense.
It is really bad, and I was also in agreement with that feeling that it is probably. At the time, I was thinking this is probably one of the worst episodes. But literally going to the bank of episodes in my mind, I can't even think of an episode that even comes close to sniffing how poor this one is. The storyline makes no sense. It's all over the place. The party has nothing to do with anything. He steals the cold medicine. They come back to it 15 minutes later. They go to jail really quickly, and then they're out. Why isn't that just the end of the episode when Jerry's going to go to jail or when George goes to jail? Why do they both have to go to jail and then get out and the episode is still not over?
Yeah, I think if Christopher were here, he might try to argue that the Chinese restaurant was worse.
No.
But I think this is much worse.
I mean, what about, Cameron, your most hated episode, The Deal? How does that compare to this?
No, see, that's the thing. If you go to the vault of episodes at whatsthedealshow.com, if you listen to that episode where we talk about The Deal, I actually say that it's a funny episode. It's a genuinely funny episode. I just don't like that emotionally they're so serious with that episode. This episode isn't funny. Like, that's the baseline criteria for enjoying an episode of Seinfeld. It has to have some humor. So, like, The Deal, I mean, for all intents and purposes, is a good episode. I just don't like what happened there. There are so few redeeming qualities about this episode. I am struggling to think of one. I like the line about, that's why we're here in America.
And maybe George Washington Carver guy.
Yeah,
he was a good actor. I liked him.
But I mean, if we're going to like a tertiary actor, like we're really hitting the bottom rung here.
Yeah, I mean, that scene where the guy hires an escort and Jerry ends up going to jail for it, that is so weird and so like out of place for Seinfeld.
But it doesn't even make sense. Where did the police come from?
You know,
did they get buzzed up when he buzzed up Elaine?
And it's like they knew what was going on already, like immediately. It's like they came up for that purpose. It's not like they're just like, oh, look at this. What's going on here?
Yeah, like...
And it's not like she was an undercover cop.
Nope.
No, I don't think so.
I mean, she took Jerry's $50.
Well, that's how they bust him.
Yeah, I mean, this episode is...
I think we can just call it the worst episode of Seinfeld ever, and it should have just remained buried.
Yeah, it
should be a lost episode.
It's bad. But hey, maybe you liked it and you want to see the show notes for today's episode and check out, I don't know, a picture of Paula Deen or 800 pictures of Paula Deen. Well, you can do it at whatsthedealshow.com. And when you go there, you can also check out our other business topic for today. So here it is. Now, many of you might be aware that the Pope, or now the... What is his new title?
Ex-Pope?
It is not Ex-Pope. It's like Pope...
The man formerly known as Pope.
Yeah. Like,
does he revert to his previous name?
No, he has a special title. It's it's Pope something.
Huh.
Anyhow.
Mini-Pope.
So Pope Benedict, or the once Pope Benedict, has given it up. He's gone back to just being a pilgrim, as he referred to himself. And so the Catholic Church went ahead and put out a Pope Benedict tribute page that you can see. And there was a little bit of derision over this, and it's not because of any controversial policies that he had. No, they decided to go with the Comic Sans font for the tribute page, and then later on, perhaps committing an even greater sin, went ahead and started putting papyrus on some other of the Vatican's tributes to him.
Do you think they're trolling? They must be trolling.
I'm not sure that they're trolling.
I don't think the Vatican trolls.
Problem? Pope troll.
And so... This just kind of brings me into it. What do you guys think about Comic Sans? Is this fair? Is it getting a bum ride?
Okay, I've got a couple of things to say about this.
Okay.
First of all, I am not a fan of Comic Sans. I think it's just aesthetically an ugly font. But I can understand that people might like it because it's kind of friendly, you know, and inoffensive and not as like official as something like, you know, your Helvetica's or your Times's or anything like that. And so if someone wants to use Comic Sans on like like a fun like office or school newsletter or something, or like a sign, you know, telling something in the office something. I can understand that, and I don't like the font, but it is appropriate. I think for something that is supposed to be fairly serious and I don't know, religious like this, Comic Sans is a completely inappropriate font, and it makes it look so stupid.
I guess that's the reason why they don't print like the obituaries in Comic Sans in the newspaper.
Like, they wouldn't print a Bible in Comic Sans because it has, like, the Bible has, you know, gravitas, right? And they want the Pope to have gravitas. So sticking it in Comic Sans, the Pope isn't a comic book character, right?
Well, how about this?
He is a superhero.
What about the tribute? What if they did the tribute to the Pope in, like, a graphic novel format and used the bubbles for the speech bubbles and put Comic Sans in there?
I think that would be fine, but I think they should still use a better comic book font.
Do they use Comic Sans like in comics?
No.
No. Really bad webcomic.
Like maybe Chuckle Bros probably uses.
So why is it called Comic Sans then?
Well, it was used originally for MS Comic Chat, which was a chat program where it looked kind of like a comic book and your chat words appeared as like bubbles on your avatar and it looked like a comic book.
Huh.
So the font was literally made by someone to look like a comic book.
But never actually used.
Never meant to be used for like word processing, but it was installed on your computer so you could use it, right?
Wow.
Oh,
so what do you guys think?
Pope Emeritus.
Oh, okay.
What do I think? I mean, for the constant derision that Comic Sans receives, and I believe it is definitely probably warranted, What I can't believe is just how often this seems to happen that people still choose to use Comic Sans in what most people would deem completely inappropriate moments. Like, even if going back into the vault a little ways here, even the Higgs boson people had parts of their presentation in Comic Sans. Like, the Higgs boson, well, there you go. Like, that was such a big deal. And such at a high level that most people are still trying to scratch their heads at what happened with that announcement. How could they possibly put Comic Sans on there? And they're the sort of people I feel like really know about the full fury of the internet backlash.
Well, I mean,
like basically, unless you're not on the internet at all, you must know that Comic Sans is derided.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't understand who it is who made this dedication. You know, actually, something just occurred to me. Well, okay, I'll finish my first thought. I don't know who it is who made this thing that they thought. Like, did they just get a secretary to throw this thing together and stick it out there? Like, I feel like they should spend some money and effort on it, you know? Their Pope resigned.
He is kind of a big deal.
Yeah, it hasn't happened in hundreds of years, and they're just like, hey, Mabel, you want to throw something together for Tuesday when Popey here resigns?
Mabel is the perfect name for someone who would use Comic Sans.
Yeah. So wait, I was thinking, so like this is kind of scandalous that the Pope is resigning. Do you think that someone did this to make him look bad?
A Pope troll.
Yeah.
Trolling the Pope.
It's just like, this guy doesn't deserve anything. Get Mabel to make it. She always uses Comic Sans.
I don't think so. I just think someone who has no font sense. Is that a term? Font sense?
Sure. I don't know if it is, but I actually was thinking that's really good.
But someone with no font sense just put this together.
I don't know. It's a disaster.
Yeah. But yet, at the strangely, at the same time, better than this episode of Seinfeld.
Really, yeah. You know, I bet the Vatican still has calligraphers on staff. Get one of the calligraphers to draw out the text. Hand draw the text.
Yeah, that's pretty nice.
You know, why not? That would be beautiful.
Do they have Wi-Fi at the Vatican? Like,
I'm certain they do.
Yeah.
At least in some of the rooms.
Which rooms are those? That sounded so specific.
I mean the offices, secret sex rooms.
Ooh. Well, we offended a billion people.
probably don't have secret sex rooms.
There I mean, you
that's,
go.
That's more of a Borgia Pope thing.
That's true.
That Borgia Pope.
The Borgia dick.
Hopefully everyone's watched that TV show and gets this weird reference we're making.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. It's very strange.
If you look at this link for the other business thing, I actually want to bring attention to this last thing. At the very bottom of the page, they actually put out a special cancellation stamp to commemorate the retirement. And people, number one, can't stand the font on it. The whole thing is strange. Have you seen this stamp, Patrick?
Mm-mm.
It's of an angel, I guess, carrying an umbrella and two giant keys.
Hmm.
And I don't know what this font is, but it is also very, very ugly.
It's kind of the 300 font for like the 300 movie poster.
Yeah, actually, that does look.
Oh, Trajan?
Like... So, sure.
Yeah.
That's what that font's called.
I mean,
Trajan.
If Chris Young was here this week, he'd be loving this.
Is he a font guy?
Oh, he's a font guy.
Does he have good font sense?
He just loves the Pope.
Yeah.
He's a Pope guy.
The Pip.
Well, I think that's
Hello?
The show.
Let's stop talk.
Okay. Let's end the show. I think much like this episode of Seinfeld, this episode of What's the Deal has been aimless, wandering, and in a moment the police are about to come in and take us away.
It was so bad, you know?
It was bad. It was rough.
I don't want to lay it at the feet of the episode, but it is 100% Jerry Seinfeld's fault that this just happened.
This was a really bad episode.
So, I tell you what, head on over to whatsthedealshow.com and listen to a good episode. We've got lots of them. We've got 26 good episodes, maybe 25. You know, let's call it 20.
That first episode was pretty rough.
Yeah, of Seinfeld, not a good show. we've got at least 20 good episodes for you to listen to in that back catalog, and you can get them all on our website, along with the show notes and the fun little pictures that make this show work. And at the same time, maybe you'd like to be notified when a good episode is available to download. You can do that because you can follow us on the social media.
Yeah, if you want to follow us on Twitter, we're at WTD Show. You can, all our episodes are posted there, and sometimes people say things to us and we say things back. You can star tweets or whatever you want to do, or you can go to Facebook. We also, all our shows are there. You can join our community of Facebooks. Go to facebook.com/ What's the Deal Show, I think. And, yeah, do those things.
Yeah, you should definitely, get in there and do that.
Yeah.
Wow. Okay. And you know what? If Chris Young were here, he'd tell you to rate our show, but he's not. So Justin Armstrong's going to tell you.
Yeah. If you head on over to iTunes, you'll probably see this little show, What's the Deal, available to be rated. And if you're so inclined, I would suggest rating it 5 stars if you want.
I mean, please don't take... I mean, if you're feeling like you want to rate it less than 5 stars after you've listened to this episode, go back an episode. Listen to episode 26.
It's a good episode.
That was a great one. You guys remember episode 26?
Man, those were the days.
Oh. Oh, the good old days.
I mean, Justin really called it when he said episode 26 was the apex. Oh, boy. And that's it. So next week... If you want to continue along with What's the Deal, and I know you do, we have another episode of Seinfeld. We'll be watching The Other Side, a very popular episode of Seinfeld in which George Costanza attempts to hold down a job where he moves cars from one side of the street to the other. And at the same time, he runs into a bit of trouble because they're filming a new Woody Allen movie in New York. And wouldn't you know it, Kramer meets old Woody Allen there. And he's got a role in the movie. And he's got a pretty, pretty, pretty good line for the movie. Something about some sort of salted snack food.
Honestly, after this episode, I am so excited to watch that episode. It is so much better. This episode should have stayed in the vault, like those Disney
down,
movies.
Eh?
Put it in the Disney vault.
But they come out like every 20 years.
Well,
although maybe
I can
that's
wait
enough
20
time
years.
For this to get into the light.
Yeah,
once
maybe...
every 20 years, this episode appears.
Yeah,
it's like finding Mewtwo or Mew in Pokemon, blue or red.
Squirtle.
I love Squirtle. All right, well. Thank you very much once again from our good friend Justin Armstrong.
Thank you for having me.
And Patrick Armstrong.
You're welcome.
And myself, Cameron Wong. Thanks for tuning in, and we'll see you again next week.
I hated this episode.
Oh man, that was a long march of a show.
I mean, once we cut this this down to the good parts, we'll have a solid 4.5 minutes. It'll just be Patrick going, poop.